Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening? And today is Tuesday, February the 13th. And the call-in number is 347-857-3293. And if you just want to listen, that's fine. But if you want to speak, you've got to hit that number one button. And we will identify you by the last four digits of your cell number. Pardon me. The flu's been hitting hard in this family, and I'm still a victim. Tonight, some of the topics we will be discussing come under the heading of Russian interference in elections. Who cares? What about American gerrymandering and voter suppression by both political parties? And what we are saying is that an anatomy of oppression requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism and an anatomy of the American capitalist system. And capitalism is the oppressor that keeps all of us in chains, along with its twin brother, racism. Regardless of what your ethnicity, you are all victims of racism. Again, we have some special announcements. We urge everyone who can, even across the ocean, to join us on March 27th in Philadelphia. Yes, back to Philadelphia once again. But please create some momentum wherever you are if you can't make Philadelphia on March 27th. We urge you to be the voice for Mamiya. Call for international demonstrations and protests and events on that date, March 27th, 2018, in as many cities as possible. While the U.S. embassies are logical targets for such actions, local groups should obviously choose the target they see as most effective in their towns, in their cities, and all over the country and all over the world. We're calling this campaign the March 27th Offensive in support of Mamiya Abu-Jamal. There are two other events we want to call to your attention: the Move 9 and all political prisoners are asking you to show up on February 24th, that's a Saturday, at the National Black Theater of Harlem on 5th Avenue and 125th Street for the panel discussion, Framed in America, the Making of Political Prisoners, and the whole issue of the latest COINTELPRO black identity extremists will be explored on this panel, along with strategies for how we can bring our warriors home. Free the Move 9. The second event you will be hearing more from our sister Anne is the anniversary for Jericho. Yoo-hoo! And their struggle to free our political prisoners, which will take place in March, and it will be in the Bronx. Sister Anne will be giving you details. Without further ado, I want to turn the mic over to Brother Ralph, but I will be back later if there is time. We want to hear the voice of Jaleel. We think we've got the technology together so you can hear just a little bit of our local resident philosopher and genius from behind the bars, compliments of prison radio in Canada. Brother Ralph, the mic is yours.
Brothers and sisters, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Now, there is so much happening, and it is very difficult to figure out where to start. But among the things that are happening, it's the same old thing. I believe it was Malcolm X said, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And we in America seem to be falling for the same thing, for the anything, over and over again. And I'd like to remind people, when I think it was Ida B. Wells and others were trying to get federal regulations against lynching because the courts and the local police, and everyone else was in on the lynching, there was no justice or defense for the lynch mobs. And I've talked about who the lynch mobs are and who they were. And what happened when black people said, we don't like that? The cry was communism. The communists taught them that they should be against lynching. And when we said we wanted to vote and we wanted jobs, they said, the communists did it. And when Martin Luther King, poor Martin Luther King, who said we want change, they said the communists told him he needed change. And when Fannie Lou Hamer says, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, they said the communists told them they were sick and tired of being sick and tired. Well, I want to tell you that all of this is nonsense. Total nonsense. What about suppression of voters? We don't have to talk about that. Everybody knows how the Republicans constantly work at voter suppression. They want more voter ID. Well, they can't blame that on the communists. And when the Democratic Party disenfranchised half of the Democrats in New York to make sure that Hillary Clinton beat Bernie Sanders, you can't blame that on the Russians. And I say that they're going to pull the wool over our eyes again, because when I hear congressmen stand up and say the Russians are planning a big attack on the American voters through the website, and I say, look out. They're going to use that to determine what goes on your cell phone, what messages they are going to control, because they're afraid that the communists are going to attack. Well, let me tell you, if anybody hasn't figured it out, Make America First is a racist, homophobic, you name it. This is the problem, and it's got nothing to do with the Russians. The Russians couldn't care less. And understand, and this is the amazing thing with the American people, that they're concerned about someone interfering in their election. And all you have to do is look at the poor little country of Haiti. You don't have to go far. Look at what happened in Haiti. The United States invaded it in 1912 with the Marines, and they've had a flunky in front of them until Aristide came along and just said, he didn't do much, but he just said, he went along with every program of oppression that the Americans had, but when they wanted the IMF to loan Haiti money, that Haiti would pay back the IMF at exorbitant rates, they wanted to hire workers from Spain. Well, the Haitians could build roads themselves. There are enough Haitians in New York City, contractors, etc., to build those roads. But they said, no, we're going to import workers from Spain. You're going to pay the money back to the Spanish for building it, to the IMF for putting the money up. And Aristide said he couldn't go with that, and they sent the Marines there to take him out. United States or Russia getting involved in American elections? Ooh. American has been involved in everybody's election around the world. Russian, Chinese, Vietnam, and today Venezuela, just constant. And yet, they have people falling for that same old game. And every time I see an announcement come from the White House press corps, they're a specter of Colin Powell being used up, telling lies, outrageous lies. And I think of Colin Powell being used like a broken pawn from a junk chessboard to bamboozle the American public. And it continues. Who are they going to throw out this time like a broken pawn from a thrown away chessboard, a junk chessboard? This time is going to be the FBI, the CIA, anybody who makes some damn foolish statement, and then the government doesn't stand behind it. And so there's so much to talk about, and I'm going to try to limit myself. And I noticed today we talk about the pharmaceuticals and all of the damage that they have done. And you think that they don't come back with the old stuff. In 1970, 1971, excuse me, maybe even 69, they talked about methadone going to cure heroin. Well, heroin addiction. We know about that. Now, you think we would have learned. And I see, no, we haven't. I see that they're raising the specter of methadone to save us one more time. And what the only thing it saves is the profits for the pharmaceuticals. And we debate about people of color's right of self-defense. And I say that issue over and over again because every time you say nonviolent resistance, you delegitimize the most basic human right of all, the right of self-defense, and they tie it up with religion. And they say that's the Christian way, that's the Christian high road, which is the damnedest lie ever, because my mother was a Christian, and my mother purchased me a gun because she had good sense. She wasn't a mean person. She wasn't a violent person. But she knew that I spoke out against injustice, against anybody who would do something that was wrong in my presence. And she had the sense to know I had won too many fights with too many men, fist fights. And she said, they're not coming after you with their fist. They're coming after you with guns, and if I buy it, will you use it? And bought the Marlin from a Sears and Roebuck catalog store for me to use, and she was a Christian. So we have to get off of this nonsense of what Christianity stands for. Christians with good sense obey the most basic of human rights, and that is the right of self-defense. But I've been given the hook, and I'm going to have to step back and turn the mic back over to Sister Betty. But these are the issues that we must begin to deal with. Thank you, Sister Betty.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. And before we call on our poet in residence, and before we call on our jailhouse lawyer who liberated himself, and before we call on our leader of the Jericho and New York City organization, I just want to make you aware of two books. One of them is a book called, which exposes the clear connection between slavery and American capitalism. Now, we have mentioned this book before, and we just want to reinforce it. It's called Slavery's Capitalism, A New History of American Economic Development, and it's edited by Sven Beckhart and Seth Lockman. And it says, contrary to popular belief, the small farmers of New England weren't alone responsible for establishing America's economic position as capitalism expanded. Rather, the hard labor of slaves in places like Alabama, South Carolina, Mississippi, kept in view as well. That's just a slice. Again, it's by Diana Gerdman wrote the article, and it's called Slavery's Capitalism, A New History of American Economic Development. The second book we've mentioned before, it's by Gerald Horne, The Apocalypse of Settler Colonialism, The Roots of Slavery, White Supremacy, and Capitalism in 17th Century North America and the Caribbean. Once again, Apocalypse of Settler Colonialism, The Roots of Slavery, White Supremacy, and Capitalism in the 17th Century, North America, and the Caribbean by Gerald Horne. I strongly urge you to check these two books out. This allegedly is Black History Month, and it's a fitting time for you to support those who support us by putting the truth out there. We've got several special guests hanging in there, but we're going to go straight to Brother Larry, and then after that, our poet is back, thank goodness. Brother Larry, your mic is open.
Thank you very much, my sister. Greetings to everyone, those who are on the panel, as well as to our listeners. Thank you very, very much, Sister Professor Betty Davis. Thank you, Brother Ralph, as always. Look, I'm going to say something that I hope is kind of funny, but it's also very true. You know, we've all heard the adage of what goes around comes around. Think about it. That's exactly what's happening right now. We need to pay attention, even to things that we don't think necessarily directly affect us. What's happening in Rome, that's what I call Washington, D.C., Rome, is absolutely fascinating. Fascinating in the sense, and I want to give you an example of what I mean by fascinating. Fascinating in the sense of, did you know that it is now coming out that the counterintelligence program of the FBI, let me say it again, counterintelligence of the FBI is directly involved in the quote-unquote surveillance, spying, whatever, on the Trump campaign, his family, blah, 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 blah. The point is that I'm trying to make is we should be paying attention to this. Why? Many, if not most, of our political prisoners, black, white, brown, red, yellow, many, if not most of them, were all targets of what? Hello, COINTELPRO.
Right.
The counterintelligence program. Come on, let's use our brains, our minds. Let's understand that what goes around is beginning to come around, but it will mean nothing if we don't pay attention and utilize the opportunity to tell people, look, we told you this in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. We told you this. And so it is fascinating, and we should be aware. Pay attention. There will be a name that you're going to hear called Bill, what is this guy's last name? Strepik or something very similar. First name Bill. He is the head of the counterintelligence Bill Precept. Have to see how it's actually pronounced. But he is the head of the FBI counterintelligence. In other words, COINTELPRO. You see, we've been saying for years and years and years, decades and decades, that it's still going on. That it did not die, that our political prisoners, most, many if not most of them, are in these gulags as a result of COINTELPRO. So
exactly.
Please, brothers and sisters, pay attention. Pay attention. It is something that does affect us. Rome is aflame, not literally, but Rome, that is to say Washington, D.C., is aflame in the sense that more and more dirt is being exposed. And, you know, you and I can say, well, we've known this all the time. Yes, we have. But we should be taking advantage, if you will, of the fact that some of this stuff is being exposed. Our political prisoners, many of whom were targets of COINTELPRO, I myself was a target of the counterintelligence program, are suffering in these gulags as a result of COINTELPRO, which is one of the many programs. There are other programs, but the CIA, FBI, NSA, and I can go on and on with all these alphabet agencies. But certainly COINTELPRO is well known, and it's surfacing yet again. Ironically, surfacing as having gone a little too far and back up, this time messing with one of their own. And we need to pay attention, and we need to link it to our to the struggle of our brothers and sisters, our political prisoners. So having said that, I would like to make one more remark, and I will get off. I want to be succinct. Russia collusion Hello, Russian collusion? That's like saying military intelligence.
Yeah.
It's a contradiction in terms.
Sure is.
You know, so let us understand that the collusion has been the collusion of the power elite, the globalists, if you will, the power elite of this country, to do what? To push hegemony, domination, if you will, worldwide. And we want to talk about Russian collusion? Give me a break. I'd just as soon sit down and eat a plate of rice-a-roni than go and talk about this nonsense. But again, we need to understand that this is the same recycled crap. I call the so-called mainstream media. I refer to the mainstream media as the vomit stream media. Now, why do I do that? Do I do that to sound hip? No. I do that. I use the word vomit because what is vomit? It is a regurgitation. And that's what this media, this system, if you will, that's what they constantly do. They regurgitate. Regurgitate, thus it's vomit. So let us not be susceptible to the vomit. We don't have to be. We of all people. When I say we of all people, be we black, white, brown, red, or yellow, I'm saying those of us who are politically, socially conscious, we of all people should know better. So I'm gonna keep quiet now. I want to thank everyone. Looking forward, as always, to hearing from my dear, dear sister Ann Lamb. Looking forward to hearing from our resident poet. He's always got it going on. Thank you. All power to the people. Free our political prisoners and free them now. All power to the people. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Brother Larry and Brother Nat, your mic is open.
Okay. This piece is called Sugar Hill Play Day versus Oslo Peace Process. ?35-pound? 3-foot! Doesn't cringe at loud sounds or pee his bed behind nightmares. Cameron, my 3-year-old Sugar Hill neighbor, is an old soul. I'm honored that he refers to me as my friend, Raymond. Cameron's mommy's a surgeon studying for her boards. His granny's a history professor writing another book. So I'm awarded a Cameron play date. Cameron has every truck ever made and knows precisely each truck's function. He teaches truck 101 to anyone in earshot. He warns work will not begin before his bright yellow hard hat's jammed on over black curls. He buckles his tool belt low and tight. He studied styles and moves of the working class, has them down pat. Cameron creates tasks for each truck, then schools me on how the crane of one truck works. He doesn't trust me with the trucks. Bless, he believes mommy and granny will protect him from scary things, feed and hydrate him after he plays hard, read and sing sleepy time lullabies, enforcing peaceful naps as the Sandman invades. So I spare Cameron fractured fairy tales of ambulances twisted into bloody metal hulks, pieces of cloth, shoes, drivers and assistants. I spare him fractured fairy tales from Oz, natives driving zigzag routes round a Frankenstein scar, dissecting their homeland, land where his trucks would have different color license plates and stop at checkpoints, manned by teenage thugs eager to cast lead. Traveling Oz by truck, Cameron might see caterpillars, crunching toys, houses, olive trees, crushing dreams. He might see fools flying featherless birds, shitting shrapnel and white fire. He might hear overloaded donkey carts squealing, moaning like mothers of itty-bitty bloody bodies piled on them, bodies later stuffed in ice cream freezers to slow their rotting, bodies so shredded even Cameron's surgeon mommy couldn't put their tiny arms, legs, and heads back together again. I spare my friend fractured fairy tales, crushing trucks like his.
Well, Syria, and I guess too many parts of the world, and we hope that he doesn't grow into a world where this is still how trucks and other vehicles are being used. Thank you for that reminder. And now, you break my heart. I wanted to laugh at the beginning and cry at the end.
Good.
And
yeah.
So I'll ask Sister Ann to come in and give us information on our political prisoners. Thanks again, Brother Ned.
Sure.
All right. Thank you. Well, always great to be here with all these wonderful people. Well, as Sister Betty mentioned earlier, we will be having our 20th anniversary celebration on Saturday, March 24th. It's not in the Bronx. It's in Kiskaya Heights. It's right over by the George Washington Bridge at the Holy Rood Church, which is a sanctuary church, among other things. That is our lovely liberation theologist, Reverend Luis Barrios, who also is one of the co-directors of the IFCO that does all those caravans to Cuba. So it should be really a wonderful event. It is up on jerichoandy.org. People can check it out if you want to take out an ad in our journal, which will be in that lovely commemorative journal. It's all right there, right on the first page, all the information you need, and also the Facebook event page. So we would love people to do that. We are saying we should have ads by February 25th. If you can't do it by then, but you know you're going to take one out, just drop us an email at nycjericho@gmail.com, and we will definitely reserve the space. That's one thing. Now, in the gulag world, where I have been quite consistently lately, we have several things going on which I think are very important and people need to pay attention. New York State Senator Patrick M. Gallivan is misusing our tax dollars once again. I think people remember when Judy Clark was going up for parole, the same man, along with other conservative members of the New York State Legislature. There's a picture of them. They're all white folk. Well, a bunch of all white men and one white woman. Are trying to get Herman Bell's parole denied once again. So in addition to the New York City PBA website, which already has a petition, Senator Gallivan and company, including Senator Martin Golden, a retired NYPD officer, and Senator Fred Ash Carr, former Broome County undersheriff, joined Gallivan, a former New York State trooper, sheriff of Erie County, and member of the New York State Board of Parole. So they want everybody to go and sign their petition, noparoleforhermanbell.com. And they go on and on and on. And this includes, of course, the New York City PBA, the New York State Troopers PBA, the president of the New York Police Investigators Association, the Police Benevolent Association of New York State, and interestingly, AFSCME Council 82, AFL-CIO. So we'd like to know what they're doing there. But anyway, there is a whole thing about it. I had sent it out. You know, they made a whole show about this. And they've done this before. As I said, it's the same cast of characters that has done this for Judy Clark, you know, and made her stay inside. Unfortunately, they're all talking about a penal philosophy. Their penal philosophy is that nobody who has been convicted of killing a police officer should ever be released from prison. Howsomever, that is not what the law says. In fact, part of the reason that they're so enraged at the moment is because in a recent decision that was made in this case of Roussas, this is an older man who way back in 1974 killed a state trooper, all right? And he got out on parole on his 12th board in December, and that is all thanks to a wonderful judge up in Dutchess County whose name is Victor Grossman. And Victor Grossman says that according to the law, the parole board cannot consider all these letters from police officers all over the planet because the law explicitly says, and this was explicitly stated, the court noted, the board improperly relied on community opposition from parties not authorized by executive law, section 259I2CAV and VII, and explicitly stated it was error for respondent to consider letters opposing parole from any person or any organization that did not fall under the definition of the law, right? So that is a very important decision. So they, of course, were totally enraged by the fact that he held the parole board in contempt. He ordered this man to have a new hearing. They didn't follow the regulations he had set down. He ordered him to have yet another de novo hearing without two parole commissioners who were, like, being extremely egregious, Commissioners Ludlow and Cruz. So this person is now had his de novo hearing, had a split decision, 2-1 to be released, and he is home in Long Island with his wife. Now, I think that's wonderful, and I'd love to meet this judge. But because this was very recent, this just happened at the end of December, so, you know, all of these people are totally enraged. So everybody else who's still, and as our brother Larry Pinckney said, victims of COINTELPRO, which they clearly are, certainly in the case of a New York 3, you can go up to freejaleel.com and read a whole booklet about what the PBA does not want you to know about the New York 3, including the Freedom of Information Act files, the new kill documents, the fact that this case went all the way up to Richard Nixon and Ehrlichman, for those of us who remember who those people were, okay? So this is very egregious to see them doing this. And at the same time, in yesterday's Daily News, they had a big article, including right on the front page, right? Waterboard prison hell. Sadistic guard used sick Gitmo torture technique and sexually battered cons. Lawsuit. All right? And then on pages 4 and 5, they go on about all the details of this, which are horrible. The correctional officer's name is Lieutenant Troy Mitchell, and he's been doing this up at Auburn. He's already cost New York State $877,637 in legal payouts over assault and sexual harassment allegations. And he's now under investigation over accusation he waterboarded two inmates and brutally beat them in their genitals. He's accused of pouring buckets of water over the mouths and noses of two shackled inmates at Auburn Correctional Facility in separate incidents. He is also accused of grabbing and twisting their genitals and then punching and whacking their groins with a baton. In one incident, Mitchell beat prisoner Matthew Raymond so savagely that he now needs a catheter to urinate, according to civil court documents filed by Raymond's lawyer, John McGoulahan, in Albany Supreme Court. Relentless in his attack, Lieutenant Mitchell then directed a corrections officer to spread Mr. Raymond's legs apart, after which the lieutenant forcibly grabbed and twisted Mr. Raymond's testicles and penis and called him a quote-unquote stupid little bitch, the filing says. All right? And then in today's news, there was yet another inmate whose lawyer got in touch with the Daily News to say there's yet another case. So while our tax dollars are hard at work with fascists like Gallivan and crew calling for people to be kept in prison because they were convicted of killing a police officer, doesn't mean they did so. And if they did so, I would give them a medal anyway. But nobody is talking about what about the culture of violence and brutality of both city and state correctional officers and the culture of violence and brutality and murder of police departments all over this country. The police can go out and kill somebody and they never go to prison. You know, so this is really, really egregious and serious, and people need to pay attention that this is going on, because they will probably then...
And it goes further than that. When you see the Fraternal Order of Police
exactly.
are able to get a phone call to a Democratic district that is in East Orange, New Jersey, right outside of Newark,
right.
and have an excellent teacher removed.
Yeah.
You know the connivance between the Democratic Party and the Fraternal Order of Police. They
yeah.
are in our lives.
Yeah,
and
all the time.
We allow it. That's why this program is here, to say anyone who would vote for a person who doesn't support the release of our political prisoners is misguided, say the least, and is self-defeating. Sister Betty.
Sister Ann, I want to thank you, and I want to say to our audience, you must up your game.
Yes.
You cannot afford to be ignorant in this country. Go to the Jericho website. Sister Ann meticulously updates and researches what's going on in this shit whole nation. And
yes.
it is up to you to fight against ignorance, all right? To remain ignorant is to allow fascism to happen. So please check out the Jericho website. She recently sent out an article about the Omaha 2 and the COINTELPRO collaboration, and it fits to a T the latest case of the black identity extremist attack that are going on in this country. And I want to give Jericho a shout-out for doing such a meticulous job. Without further ado, we want to go to one of our, shall we say, warriors for the community, someone who has battled against the destruction of the public school system, someone who has battled against gentrification, and someone who has a strong moral fiber and fights for the rights of people to be human. Sister Gwen, your mic is open.
Hi, Betty. Thank you for that introduction, and it's so good to hear everyone tonight. It's very enlightening, and there are so many things that that are on the agenda that, for example, we were talking about the gerrymandering, or Ralph brought it up as one of the topics, and you know, I was listening to the radio yesterday because there is a lot going on about gerrymandering, and thinking to myself, what you hear on the radio about the Republicans gerrymandering, and you don't hear about the Democrats doing it as much. But gerrymandering, I have a personal taste of this because I was gerrymandered in the election of 2013 when I ran against Melissa Mark Viverito. In June, just my house, just on my block, was taken out of my district, which meant that all of the money that I had raised now could not be matched. I had to start all over again. And so what I wanted to say was that this happens plenty of times, and I was very happy to hear another candidate actually call on the radio and say the same thing had happened to him in New Jersey. And what he was talking about was that it's almost impossible for anybody like myself or a grassroots person to get involved in a campaign and actually bring it home as a win, because these gerrymandered districts are done so to keep the incumbents in place. Even the system, the matching fund system, imagine Melissa Mark Viverito having, first of all, her own personal millions, and going in and saying that there was one candidate who was Puerto Rican like she was, so she felt this was a direct threat to her, and the campaign finance board giving her $80,000. That's a lot of money to give somebody over that kind of threat, as she said. So it's a very biased system, and it's a built-in way of keeping these stooges in place. And I wanted to comment, too, to ask people, be very, very careful. Not everything is as black and white as it seems. My opponent, Melissa, did come out and fought very hard for some political prisoners. And for that, I commend her. However, her job is a city council person. So while she neglected her district of East Harlem, and the poorest district in New York is the South Bronx, both of these districts were poorly taken care of. They were neglected while she was a city council person because she was off doing something that was much more glorious. It is glorious to be able to take a political prisoner out of prison. That is a wonderful thing to do. However, it has nothing to do with your job on the city council. And so while she was doing that, she was also allowing deep gentrification to happen by the upzones that she spearheaded in the districts of Harlem and East Harlem. And now this upzone has infected every district in New York, and everybody's complaining about it. They don't know what to do because the upzone is the fastest way of removing an entire population with just a stroke of a pen, and people are shocked. So before you get behind a person for one issue, I just want to remind people that politicians are multifaceted, and often they like to step out of their actual real responsibilities and grab onto something that's going to give them the glory. For example, right now we see the churches, and we see this wonderful movement of the sanctuary churches. However, be careful, because although there are plenty of wonderful people out there, and of course all of the people that are the immigrants are victims of what's going on under the Trump administration, we have many people, many charlatans at the top who call themselves Christians, and they're simply not. And I will tell you that I was at Occupy Wall Street, and Wall Street is what funds the prison industrial complex in this country, which is the biggest purveyor of sin, I think, anywhere in the world. And so when a church gets behind a company like UBS and gives millions of dollars to UBS, which, by the way, was one of the biggest money launderers in 2012, had a case against them. And interestingly enough, nobody actually went to jail. They just had to pay a huge fine. If you were on my street and you were smoking a joint, you would be going to jail for 5 years.
Right.
So you go and you are doing business with some of the biggest cartels in the world to launder their money. And now the church that I belong to is going to go ahead. They've already gone ahead, and they're riding $17 million with the UBS banks. And in addition to that,
wow,
they're taking money. Yes, $17 million is what Park Avenue Church has given to UBS Bank under the direction of Ms. Kaji Doja. And she is our minister, and people are saying that she is the next shooting star. But this is under her jurisdiction. And it's a funny thing, because I'm sorry, I'll just wrap it up by saying this, that I think that there are, as my friend Joel reminds me all the time, the Pharisees are everywhere. There are many false prophets. And before you throw your support behind somebody 100%, remember, there's a lot of things going on at the same time. I cannot get behind any place that would talk about Jesus Christ and Wall Street in the same sentence. I cannot do it, and I will not do it. I fought at Occupy Wall Street, and I fought that battle because of the terrible things that Wall Street has done on our planet. And I think the real Christian thing to do is to not ride your money on places like UBS Bank and not get behind places that would fund places like that. The real grassroots people need to remember usually come to the table with very little in their wallets, but lots of wear and tear on their feet and a lot of volume in their mouths and big hearts. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that. And it's a reminder again that the biggest problem on this planet is corruption.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's everywhere. And we see, you've reminded me of Oxfam. Now, you know, like have accepted funds from around the world to support Haiti, the people who are in trouble due to the unnatural disaster of imperialism and the natural disaster of earthquakes. And what did they do with the money? The money that Hillary didn't steal, they stole it. and lived high.
Right.
But I could go on. But Joe, your mic is open. Joe, your mic is open.
Hello?
Yes,
yes, hello. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Yeah.
Very clear.
Yeah. I was reading an article in the New York Times about what they call the rape loophole, which is apparently a privilege given to police officers.
Oh my God.
It's actually written into the law, according to this article, in 35 states. Now, people may have read recently that there are two police officers right now of the NYPD being tried for rape of somebody that they had arrested and when before mentioned how the biggest criminals in the world hold the keys to locking everybody else up. If you you could steal billions of dollars, you can murder millions of people, but if you're smoking a joint, why, you can go to jail for that. And this woman apparently was arrested smoking a joint, and then she was taken away from the area and raped by two police officers, one in witness of the other. One of the things that, you know, those who say, well, you know, there's certain rotten apples in the barrel, but most of them haven't been convicted of anything. What you never read about is a police officer enforcing the law. That's what they're supposed to be doing, against another police officer who's breaking the law, especially if they're breaking the law against one of their victims who's being arrested, and whatever the merits of the arrest is being abused and further victimized by a beating, a shooting, killing, or something like that. You never hear of the other police officers saying, you know what, you just committed a crime too, and you're under arrest. But apparently written into the law, both of these police officers admit forcing themselves on this woman, but they're saying that this was a consensual act of sex. It was not the rape at all. Now, imagine that this apparently happens quite frequently. We know that on a civil level, that some reforms have been introduced, let's say, on in the workplace, where supervisors and bosses who put sex pressure on subordinates at work can be cited for harassment and so on. And even in a case very much short of an actual rape. But police officers, when you're under detention, even though you're under a lot more pressure than just from a supervisor on the job, I mean, they can kill you if they want. They say that they accept if the police, while you're under arrest and in detention, that you're freely giving consent to that police officer to rape you. Yeah. And this is a law in 35 states. It's not like somebody cited this crazy court decision that was somehow upheld. It's written into the law. It must have been, and that means that, you know, things usually don't get written into the law until they've happened, until it is an occurrence about which to, and yet this is something that has occurred frequently, and in 35 states, it's explicit, apparently, that a police officer having intercourse with a woman under arrest can be looked at as consensual sex. And therefore, since there are no witnesses and everything else, it leads to an acquittal, because it can't be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And in fact, it's even written that way in the law, that that's how it has to be done, under those circumstances. There are certain exceptions to the consensual thing. We know, like if a woman is underage, you can't claim consent because she's not under the circumstances capable of forming valid consent. And that's called statutory rape. And yet, it's considered legitimate sexual contact for police to have intercourse with a woman. All we have to do is say that she gave consent, and we'll see what happens to these officers that are now under trial. Actually, they shouldn't be called officers.
Oh, we will be watching that.
Yeah.
And I hate to say history will repeat itself over and over again because this was such an outrageous case. And I'm thinking again of the Congress talking about limiting what goes on the email and the website on the internet, and they're using Russian interference to do it. And if we didn't have the internet, how much would we know about police killings and rape and all of the other things that go on? Sister Betty.
Thank you so much, Joel. But we need to remember that in America, the police started as slave catchers. And I think that says it all. We have two guest speakers, 612, last four digits, 3103. If you want to speak, your mic is open. 612.
Thank you for taking my call. If I could just share quickly, I feel like that last statement, you know, I was totally in agreement with what the previous caller was saying as far as need to hold these police officers accountable for their actions, and anytime police abuse their power, they need to be held accountable, and I think we as the public have to put the pressure to make that happen. But when your last statement, when you try to say that police officers were, you know, similar to slave catchers, and as if disparaging, as if cops don't actually play a vital role in our society, and especially in the case of New York City, I mean, look at what New York City used to be like in the 80s and 90s and how dangerous it was at night. And so, you know, yes, it was. It was horrible. I was there. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about.
I was there
at night,
too.
In the subways, it was. So you're telling me that the crime rate in New York City is at the same level now that it was in the 80s and 90s? Are you kidding me?
Well, we have different corruptions, but go ahead and finish your thought. Hello?
No, but I mean, this idea that you can just whole cloth and just like discount the entire all people who are police officers, as if all these police officers are corrupt and they're nothing but evildoers who are just trying to oppress people. That's not true. They play a necessary role in society having to do with criminal activity. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you may laugh at that, but I mean, I'm someone who, you know, I was a police officer, I was in the military, and I can tell you the things that I saw when I was on the force, the type of crimes and things that you wouldn't even, I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy to witness, let alone have to go in there and deal with. And so it's very easy when you're not the person that has to do the dirty job of actually going to have to deal with these crimes and go to these scenes and deal with things and see things that keep you up at night for years to where you have to take medication just because you can't stop thinking about stuff. You have no idea what happens in society. You don't see it on television. They don't show you the type of dirty stuff that cops have to go out and deal with on an everyday basis.
Well, anyway, why don't you come on next week? We'll put you on early, and I would like to explore the whole relationship, the whole history of policing in America. Now, you have given an opinion, but I ask you, how many policemen have been, unarmed policemen have been shot in America recently? Just think of that. See you.
Well, just compare the number of people that have been shot by police officers. Compare that to the number of repeat homicides that were committed, just citizen to citizen, aside with a police officer not involved. I mean, look at the difference.
Yes. If I may, there are many, many homicides that are created in America, and the system is askew because black people are in prison to the tune of 80%. And most of them for nonviolent crime. Whereas upstate New York, where we have our farm, a gentleman was released from prison after he had been a convicted murderer, and he got out and he proceeds to kill his grandmother. So I'm not saying that some people don't need to be incarcerated, and I'm not saying it's a stop. However, what we are saying, there's an imbalance here. And wherever you have an imbalance, an injury to one, injury to all. That's what we're trying to say.
Okay, so out of that 80% of black people that are in jail, like, for example, I'm a black person myself, and I police in a lot of really rough inner city areas. Out of that 80% that you put out there, that you claim were nonviolent crimes. Okay, but I'm just saying, how many of those people were involved in drug trafficking?
How many cops are involved in drug trafficking?
Yeah, but they're... But that's not.
Come on, give me a break, brother.
Hold on. So this is what you're trying to do is you're trying to say that that people who engage in criminal activity are really just victims. They're not actually responsible for the actions, and that it's wrong that they're in prison for their actions.
We are out of time.
Wow.
See you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
To be free, I wish I could bring.